Osho, Returning to the Source, Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 10.
When Teng Yinfeng was about to die, he said to the people around him, "I have seen monks die sitting and lying, but have any died standing?" "Yes, some," they replied. "How about upside down?" asked Ting. "No, never such a thing," they said. So Ting died standing on his head, and his clothes also rose up close to his body. It was decided to carry him to the burning ground, but he still stood there without moving. People from far and near gazed with astonishment at the scene. His younger sister, a nun, happened to be there. She grumbled at him, "When you were alive, you took no notice of laws and customs, and even now you're dead, you are making a nuisance of yourself." She then prodded her brother with her finger, and he fell down with a bang. Then they went off to the crematorium.
Death is the root of all fear. And if there is fear, you cannot live. With fear, there is no life. If there is fear, you are already dead. This is the vicious circle. You are afraid of death, and because of fear, you cannot live. And you are already dead. Then you become more afraid. Then the fear creeps in to your very center. Then you become just a trembling. As I see you, you are just a trembling. And this fear is the root of all fears. Always you will find the fear of death if you dig deep in any fear, whatsoever the form of the fear, but somewhere the fear of death is hiding there. Why people are so much afraid of death? Is really death such a phenomena to be afraid of? First thing to remember, you don't know death. You have not known it. How you can be afraid of something that you don't know? That's impossible. You can be afraid of something you know, but of something that is totally unknown, absolutely unknown, how you can be afraid? Fear needs an object to be afraid of. You cannot be afraid of death really, you must be afraid of something else. And that something else is an unfulfilled life. You have not been able to live. You have not been able to achieve a fulfillment. You have not been able to overflow. You have not been able to celebrate. Your life has been an emptiness, a hollowness, a nothing. and death is coming near and you have not been able to live yet. This creates the fear. Death is coming near and you will be no more. The opportunity is being taken away. Every moment you are losing life and you have not lived yet. This creates the fear. Death is approaching. That is not the fear. The fear is that I have not lived yet and death is knocking at the door. The time to leave has come and I am yet unfulfilled. If you have lived, you have a fulfillment, a contentment, a deep gratitude. You have flowered. There is nothing more to achieve. Then you are not afraid of death. Rather, you welcome. You have achieved. Now death comes like a deep sleep. After the day's labor, the whole day of achievement, of fulfillment, of reaching, of meeting, of encountering, of flowering, and then death comes like a deep sleep. You welcome it. When the tree has flowered, death is welcome. When the tree was still making a struggle to flower, there is fear. If you are afraid of death, you simply give one indication that your life has been a wastage. It has been like a desert. Nothing has flowered in it. It has been like a pond, closed in itself, not moving anywhere. It has not been like a river, flowing, dancing, running towards the ultimate. When a river reaches to the ocean, it is a death. When a pond dries, becomes more and more dirty, evaporates, that too is death. But both are so absolutely different. When a river reaches to the ocean, it is a fulfillment. Because the river will die here and will become something greater there. It is a jump. Jump from the finite into the infinite. The river is losing itself, its identity. It is becoming the ocean. Nothing is lost. And everything is gained. But a pond drying up, not reaching anywhere, no ocean anywhere, just drying in itself, is also dying. You are like a pond. That's why the fear of death. Be like a river, and then there is no fear of death. Death itself is like sleep. Sleep is a temporary death. So if a person becomes very much afraid of death, he is bound to become afraid of sleep also. In the West, insomnia has become now a common phenomenon. Almost everybody is suffering from it. It is not only because of mental tensions that this insomnia exists. Deeper than tensions is fear, fear of death. You cannot let go. I know a person who is so afraid of death that he cannot sleep because he is afraid he may die in his sleep. He tries to be awake, talk, read, listen to the music, but he is afraid of going into sleep. And if you are afraid for many, many days, it becomes a habit. Unknowingly, you create a barrier against sleep. In the West, people are afraid of sleep. And if you are afraid, how can you go into sleep? And sleep is like death. So logically, they are right. If you are afraid of death, you should be afraid of sleep also. They are similar phenomena. It is a temporary death. After the day's labor, the work, you are exhausted. You need a death so that you can be reborn. So that in the morning you are again rejuvenated, fresh, young. And in sleep, exactly death happens. Have you observed the fact that in sleep you are not the same person at all? You don't remember who you are. You don't remember whether you are rich or poor. You don't remember your own face. You don't remember who is your father and who is your mother. You don't remember anything that you have learned, anything that has been cultivated in you. You drop everything at the door and you go to sleep. That's why it is so much refreshing, because you get rid of yourself. You are like a burden. You put it at the door and you fall into sleep. Sleep opens a different dimension where no identity, no ego, nothing of this world exists. That's why it is so fresh, so refreshing. In the morning you come back alive, a new day starts, a new life. The fear of death will automatically create a fear of sleep and a fear of love, because love also is like death. You die in it. That's why people cannot love. They talk about it. They fantasy. They imagine. But they never fall in love. Even if they try to manipulate the phenomena, not allow it, because love is also like death. Four things are similar: death, love, sleep, meditation. Their qualities are similar. And the basic similarity is that you have to dissolve. And people are afraid of all. If you are afraid of death, you will be afraid of sleep, of love, of meditation. Many come to me and they say, how to love? It is not a question of how. And when you ask how, you are trying to manipulate. You would like to remain in control. So whenever you want, you can put on the button or put off. You would like to remain the master of the whole thing. But nobody can be in possession of love. Love possesses you. You cannot possess it. Love controls you. You cannot control it. Love means you are no more there. Something else has come. That's why love is so rejuvenating. Even if an old man falls in love, suddenly you see his face has become younger. His eyes are no more old. His body may be old, but his total being suddenly becomes young. Why it happens? The very thing that you can allow and let go, you move to the original source of energies. where rebirth is possible. You touch the deathless core. Only you touch when you are ready to die. That is the paradox. You touch the deepest core when you are ready to die. If you cling to the surface and you are afraid to let go, you remain on the surface, and surface is the body. People who are afraid of love are not afraid of sex. Love is dangerous. Sex is not dangerous. It can be manipulated. And there are now many manuals how to do it. You can manipulate it. Sex can become a technique. Love can never become a technique. In sex, you try to remain in control. Then even sex will not reach to the ultimate. It will go to a certain point and you will drop back, because it also needs somewhere a let go. That's why orgasm is becoming more and more difficult. Ejaculation is not orgasm. To give birth to children is not orgasmic. Orgasm is the involvement of the total body, mind, body, soul, all together. You vibrate. Your whole being vibrates from the toe to the head. You are no more in control. Existence has taken possession of you. You don't know who you are. It is like a madness. It is like a sleep. It is like meditation. It is like death. So even in sex, you go up to a moment. But you don't allow totality. Because if you allow totality, then the ego cannot exist. And this is the problem. You are afraid of death because you are not capable to live totally. Love, meditation, sleep, nothing is total. In your activity also you are not total, because if you are total, there also a moment comes when you are lost. Losing yourself has become the problem. You cannot lose. You cannot relax. You do something. You go in the garden and dig a hole. But you are not total. If you really are total and digging the hole, you forget yourself completely. The self-consciousness disappears. You are conscious, but not self-conscious. You are aware, but there is no ego. You are aware of the total, the trees, the sun rays coming, the breeze blowing, the birds singing, your activity, the digging of the hole, the mud coming out. You are aware of everything except yourself. In that moment also, an orgasmic feeling comes in. It is like deep love. It is like sleep. It is like death. You will come out of it totally different and new. If you don't move into a let go, life cannot happen to you. It happens through that passage when you are not standing in the way, then life happens to you. Then you feel fulfilled. When you are fulfilled, there is no fear of death. When there is no fear of death, you become more and more capable of let go. And if you really have known what life is, who bothers about death? And if you have really known what life is and celebrated it, then death is not the end. then death is just the culmination, the peak, the highest let go. Love is nothing. A sexual orgasm is nothing. A sleep is nothing. If you have lived life rightly, fulfilled, then death is the greatest bliss, because it is the greatest let go. More intense and totally let go, more will be the bliss. This is the rule. This is the law. So what to do? If you want to live, allow death also. They are like two wings. And death is not a thing somewhere in the end. It is a process. The day you were born, you have been dying. It is not life here and death there, life now and death then. No. You cannot divide them. They are together. They have to be. Life is death. Life and death both are two wings. The day you are born, the same day you have started to die. It is a process. You inhale, it is life. You exhale, it is death. In the morning you get up, it is life. In the evening you go to bed, it is death. You work, act, it is life. Then you relax. It is death. It is continuous. Every moment it is there. And if you avoid death, you will be avoiding life also. If you don't want to exhale deep, how you can inhale deeply? If you don't want to relax, how can you act deeply? You won't have any energy. If you are afraid of sleep, in the morning you will not wake up fresh. You will feel sleepy the whole day. Then everything gets mixed up. You are neither alive nor dead, just dragging on. And this is the bad situation, just dragging on. Either be alive or be dead, but don't drag on. In both the cases, either be dead totally, you will attain to a greater life. Live totally, you will attain to a greater death, because they are two aspects of the same coin. Once you can see that life implies death, that every act of being alive is also an act of dying, you have seen the total. Then life is not serious. Then it is a fun. It becomes serious because of the fear of death. You cannot laugh loudly because of the fear of death. You cannot enjoy because of the fear of death. You cannot do anything because of the fear of death. The death is always near the corner, like a black shadow following you. It doesn't allow you to do anything. Then you become serious. Then you start thinking how to attain the deathless. Then you start searching how to become an immortal, how to find the secret, the elixir. And these are all nonsense searches. This is not true seeking. There exists nowhere in something chemical, alchemical, like elixir, ambrosia. No. It is in the secret of seeing life and death as a single process. You cannot find the secret anywhere. The philosopher's stone exists nowhere. It exists in this fact that life and both are together. They are one process, a unitary phenomenon. Then you are not afraid. Then rather, on the contrary, you are thankful to death, because life becomes possible only because of death. Through death, life becomes possible. Through dying, everything is renewed. So death is not against, it is not the opposite, it is not the enemy. It is through death that life becomes possible. You are alive because you can die. If you cannot die, you will not be alive at all. You don't know what you are asking. If you ask deathlessness, then you will be a rock. Then you cannot be alive. Look at the flower. This morning it has flowered. Just near the flower there is a rock. By the evening, the flower will be gone, the rock will be there. Because flower was more alive and rock is not so much alive. The flower is dead by the evening. What do you want? To be a rock-like phenomenon or a flower-like phenomenon? Why the flower dies so soon? Because it is so alive. So intensely alive that the death comes soon. It doesn't linger on. The flower is not dragging. It lived the moment. It lived it totally. It danced under the sky. It enjoyed the sun, the breeze. For a moment, it was eternity. The flower laughed. The flower sang. The flower did whatsoever was to be done. And by the evening, the flower is ready to die, and without a single tear in the eyes, without weeping and crying. Look at a dying flower. The petals have already fallen on the ground. But you can never say it is ugly. It is beautiful in death also. Then look at a man dying. He becomes ugly. Why? Because of the fear. Fear makes you ugly. If you are too much afraid, you will become more and more ugly. The flower is fulfilled. Now the time to rest has come. And the flower is going to rest. And when the rest is over, the flower will come back. Again and again, life is an eternal recurrence. Death is just a rest. You need not be worried about it. You simply live. And if you live, then you are not serious. If you are simply afraid of death, then you are serious. To be sincere is one thing, to be serious is another. A man who loves life is sincere, authentic, but never serious. Life is not like an illness. If you are looking at the death and are obsessed with death, then life is just serious. Then you will become a long face. You may move to the monasteries, to the temples, go to the Himalayas, but you will remain a long face. It is fear that has taken you to the monastery. Remember, an authentic religious person is not fear-oriented. He is love-oriented. A really authentic religious person becomes religious to enjoy life more. To enjoy it deeply and totally. He is not scared. A real religious man looks at life as a game. It is not business. It is a game. Hindus call it Leela, a play. Not even a game, but a play. There is a difference between game and play. Children's play. You even make game out of plays, then they become business-like. Then even playing, you are seeking victory, success, gain, profit. Life is a play. Nothing to be achieved out of it. It itself is the goal. There is nowhere to reach. It itself is the ultimate. Life is not moving to achieve some goal. It is not going anywhere. It is just like children play. You cannot ask them, for what are you playing? What is the purpose? They will laugh at your foolishness. They will say, we are simply playing. It is so beautiful. Profit is not their concern. And profit should not be your concern also. Play. Life is a moment to celebrate, to enjoy. Make it a fun, a celebration, and then you will enter the temple. The temple is not for the long faces. It has never been for them. Look at life. Do you see anywhere sadness? Have you seen a tree depressed? Have you seen a bird anxiety ridden? Have you seen an animal neurotic? No, life is not that, not at all. Only man has gone somewhere wrong. And he has gone somewhere wrong because he thinks himself to be very wise. Thinks himself to be very clever. Your cleverness is your disease. Don't be too wise. Always remember to stop. Don't go to the extreme. A little foolishness and a little wisdom is good. And the right combination makes you a Buddha. A little foolishness and a little wisdom. Don't be just wise, otherwise you will be a long face. Don't be just a fool, otherwise you will become suicidal. A little foolishness, enough to enjoy life, and little wisdom to avoid the errors, that will do. And one has to know the right combination. And the right combination is always different for each individual. My right combination cannot be your right combination. Nobody is a model for anybody else. You have to find your own balance. Because everybody is so unique. But always remember, don't destroy foolishness completely. Because in certain moments, to be foolish is to be wise. And everybody should remain open. In certain moments you should be like children. In certain moments you should simply forget the business of life. Purposelessly. Just enjoying the moment. Doing foolish things. Dancing and singing. And playing with pebbles on the shore. And collecting pebbles. And nobody inside you says what foolishness you are doing. This time can be devoted to collect money. This time you can be in the office and in the shop and your bank balance can grow. What are you doing? Are you a child? If your child is completely lost, you can never be religious. Religion is for children. That's why Jesus insists, only those who are like children will be able to enter into the kingdom of my God. But what being a child means? Observe a child, he is wise, he is fool also. When it is needed, he can be wise, very wise. I was staying with a family for a few days, and a small boy of the family was reading a book. On the book cover, there was a picture of Atlas supporting the earth. So I asked the child, "Do you know who this Atlas is?" He says, "Yes. He is a great giant who supports the whole world." So I said to him, "Correct. But who supports Atlas?" He thought for a moment and then he said, "I think he must have married a rich wife." They can be wise. And they are fools. And when a child is wise, the wisdom has the freshness of the dew drop in the morning. It is not stale. Your wisdom is stale, contaminated. You have collected it, you have borrowed it. You have taken it from others. It is not your own. What do you know that is your own? You have collected from many sources. That is knowledge, not wisdom. Wisdom is a response, fresh response to the moment. Knowledge is old, rotten, collected thing. You don't respond to the moment, you bring the past, the memory into it, and you react through it. Wisdom is response, knowledge is reaction. You have already the answer. Before the question has been raised, you have a ready-made answer. It is not wisdom. A child is wise because he has no knowledge. He has to look around. He has to feel. He has to think. He has to respond. He does not know. It is said, it is a Christian myth, that when Jesus came to the sea turned into wine, red wine. And Christian theologians have been trying to explain it. How the sea can turn into red wine. And they have been at much difficulty, puzzled, and no answer has been yet found. But a small child found the answer. That small child was Lord Byron, who became very famous later on as a great poet. He was a small child in the school. And the question was asked, that why and how the sea turned when Jesus reached into red wine. The answer was fixed, ready-made. It has been taught already. All other children started writing their answers. Only Byron waited with closed eyes. The teacher came many times, but he was so meditative that she thought it is better not to disturb him. He was so much thinking. And what a child can think? Because thinking always is of the known. If you know, you can think. If you don't know, what you can think? What he was doing? Thinking is possible only if you know something, then you can think. But if you don't know, you don't know. The child was sitting silently, but he looked so beautiful. And then at the end, he simply wrote a single sentence. And the sentence was, "Seeing that my Lord has come, the sea became shy, turned red." And Jesus has come, my Lord has come. And the sea, seeing that my Lord has come, became shy like a girl. The Beloved has come. And that shyness on the face of the sea. But only a child can answer that way, because he does not know the answer. But this is beautiful. All the theologians are just foolish before this child. He has said the right thing. He has explained the whole thing. A certain wisdom exists when you are innocent. But innocence is ignorance. And of course, a certain foolishness exists when you are innocent, when you are ignorant. A child is beautiful because he is both innocent, wise in his innocence, and foolish in his innocence. And a child is the right proportion for you. And remember, you will have to attain to a second childhood before you can enter into the kingdom of God. A second childhood is even more beautiful than the first, because the first you were not aware. In the second you will be fully aware. And this is how Zen masters behave. You will find them sometimes just foolish. And you will find them in certain moments so wise that you cannot believe how this foolishness can exist with such a wise man. And you, in your knowledge, are also foolish, but your foolishness is also contaminated, it is not innocent. When foolishness is innocent, it has a wisdom of its own. And when foolishness is contaminated by knowledge, it is simply idiocy, it has no wisdom. I have heard that Albert Einstein was staying with a very knowledgeable woman who knew much. In the night, they were sitting near the window, and the woman said, "Look outside, Dr. Einstein. This star, this Venus, is so beautiful. It looks like a beautiful woman." Einstein said, "My dear lady, it is not Venus, it is Jupiter." The lady said, "Dr. Einstein, you are simply amazing. You can even judge the sex of the planet from such a far away place." She said, Venus is feminine. Jupiter is male. She said, "You are amazing. How can you judge the sex of the star from so far away?" And the woman is very knowledgeable. She is a professor in some university, but foolish in her knowledge. And whenever you are foolish through your knowledgeability, you are idiotic, simply idiotic. Be foolish like a child. If you don't know, you don't know. Don't pretend. A child can simply say, "I don't know." Can you say so simply that "I don't know"? So difficult to say, "I don't know," because when you say "I don't know," the eye drops. And unless you say, I don't know, you will never be wise. Only through ignorance the ego drops. And when there is no ego, you have attained to a second childhood. This Zen master you will not be able to understand if you can't see this quality of a wise fool. Our fool is in his wisdom. A man who takes life as a fun. When he takes life as a fun, he takes death also as a fun. Nothing is a problem to him. He accepts everything. He is playful. Now, try to understand this beautiful story. When Tang In Feng was about to die, a master, a very well-known master, he said to the people around him, I have seen monks die sitting and lying, but have anybody died standing? Yes, some, they said. How about upside down? Asked Tang, no, never such a thing, they replied. Death is coming near. Death is going to knock the door. And the master says, how to receive it? The guest is coming. How to be the host? How to receive it? You die, a master receives death. You die, clinging to life, not ready to die. You had to be snatched away. That's why your whole being becomes ugly. A master prepares. Even for the posture, he is asking, what posture to die in? Because death should be received in a unique way. It doesn't come every day. It is a rare guest. One should prepare. One should be ready. And what type of master this thing was? He asked, I have seen monks die sitting and lying. Ordinarily, people die lying on their bed, not even sitting. Only few people who die in meditation, meditatively, die sitting. Otherwise, 99% people die on the bed. He asked, have you seen somebody dying standing? They said, yes, few rare persons have died standing. They too die standing because they are very meditative and there are certain techniques which can be done only standing. For example, Jnana techniques, Mahavir and his techniques have to be done standing. He meditated for years standing. He will sit only when he was tired, otherwise he will stand. A certain silence comes to you immediately if you stand quietly. Just in the corner of your room, try. Just in the corners, stand silently, not doing anything. Suddenly the energy also stands inside you. Sitting, you will feel many disturbances in the mind, because sitting is the posture of a thinker. Standing, the energy flows like a pillar and is distributed equally all over the body. Standing is beautiful. Few techniques are. Just do the meditation standing. Try it, because some of you will find it very, very beautiful. If you can stand for 1 hour, it is just wonderful. Just by standing, not doing anything, no movement, you will find something settles within you, becomes silent. A centering happens, and you will feel yourself like a pillar of energy. The body disappears. So few meditators have died standing. Then Teng asked, how about upside down, standing in a sirsasana, headstand posture? Nobody has ever died. You cannot even sleep in that posture. Dying is very difficult, because the blood circulates towards the head. So nobody has ever tried this. Teng is simply the only one who has not only tried, he did it. It is absolutely impossible posture for dying, because you cannot sleep in it. For sleep, a certain phenomena is needed in the body. The blood should not be circulating towards the head. That's why we use pillows, to make the head a little higher than the body, so the blood is not flowing towards the head. If the blood is flowing towards the head continues thinking. So the more you become civilized, the size of pillows increase. Then 1, 2, 3. A great thinker has to use 5, 6, 7. Because the blood circulation has to be stopped. That's why when you eat, after eating, sleep becomes easier, because the blood circulates towards the stomach. The body has now a more basic functions to do, and that is how to digest the food. Thinking cannot be allowed. Thinking is a luxury. When you have eaten too much, then you can think. When you are starving, you cannot think. That's why many religions have used fasting for meditation. Because if you fast, you cannot think. The body needs energy for more basic functions. It cannot be given to the head. Head is a luxury. That's why animals don't think. They have not come to that standard of life yet. More rich a country, more thinking. Poorer a country, less thinking. Because you cannot afford energy for thinking. If you do fast, you will feel that in the night it is difficult to sleep. Very difficult. Because nothing to digest, the whole energy moves towards the head. Energy movement has to be stopped towards the head, only then you can sleep. It is difficult to sleep standing in an upside posture. And Teng said then, how about upside down? No, never such a thing. The disciple said, we have never heard. What are you talking? A person is standing on the head and dying. So Teng died standing on his head. And his clothes also rose up close to his body. That's possible. Before, few years before, it would have been simply a myth. But now there are scientific explanations for it. It is possible. Because the body is electricity. It is nothing but bioelectricity. And when somebody dies, the body becomes a pillar of energy, and that pillar leaves the body. If it is very magnetic energy, as it has to be with a master, the clothes just will be magnetized. Not only Tang died, his clothes rose with his body. They cling to the body. If you rub your clothes on the body, you will feel a certain electricity can be created in the clothes. Body is electric. And when body dies, the electricity leaves the body. It is pulled upwards. Just with that fellow, those clothes might have risen. And there is no need to think about it as a myth or a story. It is possible. So Tang died standing on his head. Is death so easy that you can die? Yes, death is easy if you have lived. Then you can choose the right moment to die. You have heard, you must have heard, many saints always say, they make a prediction that they will be dying on a certain day, certain time. People think that they know how to read future. That is nonsense. Nobody can read future. Future means that which remains invisible. Then what they do? If I say to you that after 7 days I will be dying, in the morning 6 o'clock, sharp, so don't miss, then what you will think? How it is possible? The only possibility to the mind seems that somehow I know the future. That is not the right thing. Nobody knows the future. But a man who has lived totally can decide when to die. He is not predicting. He is simply saying that he has decided to die on a certain day, 6 o'clock in the morning. If you have lived, and when I say lived, I mean totally, then you know what life energy is. Then you know all the nook and corners of life energy. Then you know all its tides. When it comes to become a tide, when it ebbs, where is a peak and where is a valley. Then you know all its nuances. If you have lived totally, you know yourself totally. Then you can decide, there is no problem. It is so simple as this, that I will leave this room at 6 o'clock. What is the problem? 6 o'clock, you go out of the room. But you have to know yourself, the room, the door, where it exists. You are not aware who you are. You are not aware what you are. You are aware only of a very minute fragment of your being, that is your mind, and that too not fully. 9/10 of your being remains a dark continent. It is yet a Africa. You never enter into it. In your inner being, the geography is yet not completely measured, mapped. You don't have your own map. Once you know your map, the inner geography, the topography, then simply you can decide when to leave, when the right moment has come. You can leave this body, because this body is just a house, an abode. It is not you. A master is unidentified with the body, unidentified with the mind. He can decide. So Tang stood on his head and died. Even this impossible posture of standing on the head can be used. If you know how to live, you know how to die, because they are both one. Another thing to be understood, why he is joking about death. Death is a serious affair, and he is making fun of it. Standing on his head, he is making fun of death. He is saying that if you have lived a life of celebrations, you can die celebrating. It is a fun. Because you know now, you are not going to die. Now you know something in you is eternal. Then whole life becomes a fun. It is a great cosmic joke. You can play with it. In his death, he is giving a message to his disciples that everything is a fun. Don't be too much concerned about anything. Just live the moment while it lasts. And live it and enjoy it. This is my feeling also. That God is not going, if there is any God, He is not going to ask you what right thing you have done and what bad thing you have done and what sins you have committed and what virtues you have followed. No. If there is any God, He is going to ask you whether your life was a celebration or a sadness. That's the only thing that can be asked. When the whole existence celebrates, why you are standing separate, alone, isolated, and then you feel you are a stranger? When flowers flower, why you stand aloof? Why not flowers? When birds sing, why you stand aloof? Why not sing? Why not become a participant? Religion is a participation in the mystique that is all around you, in the mystery that is all around you. It is not an effort to know, it is an effort to be a participant. Then everything is beautiful. Life is beautiful, death is beautiful. And you can play a joke. A rare man, this thing. The disciples were very much afraid what to do. Never before there is a precedent. Nobody has died this thing on in his head. So what to do with this man? It was decided to carry him to the burning ground, but he still stood there without moving. If you have been in life, an energy pillar, an unmoving pillar, if you have attained anything in life that has become crystallized, even in your death, you can use death. There are many versions of this story. In one version, the sister came and said, "Why are you making a fool of yourself?" And Teng laughed and fell dead. People from far and near gazed with astonishment at the scene. His younger sister, a nun, happened to be there. She lived in another monastery for women. She came. Not because the brother was dead. She came just to see at the foolishness he was doing there. She was an elder sister to Teng, and she could teach him the last lesson. She grumbled at him, "When you were alive, you took no notice of laws and customs. And even now, you are dead, you are making a nuisance of yourself. This Teng is one of the rebellious Zen masters. He lived a life without any laws and without any regulations. He lived a life without any enforced discipline. Not that he was not disciplined. He was absolutely disciplined, otherwise how he can stand and die on his head. He was not only disciplined in life, he is disciplined in his death. You cannot find such absolute discipline, but no enforced discipline. The discipline came from his inside. He followed his own way. He never followed anybody. He has rules, but the rules were not fixed by any outside code. They came out of his own awareness. Of course, he was a nuisance to other people. It is said of Teng that when he lived with his own master and was a disciple, he will sleep long after everybody is up and the whole monastery is working. It is 9 o'clock in the morning and he is still sleeping. And once the master came and he said, Teng, what are you doing? One has to get up in the Brahma Muhurt at 5 o'clock. This is a monastery. It is reported that Teng said, of course, I always get in the morning. I always get up in the Brahma Muhurt. The master said, what are you saying? It is 9 o'clock. It is 4 hours the sun has risen. Teng said, whenever the Brahma within me wants to get up, then I get up. That is the Brahma Muhurt, the moment of God. When the God within me wants to get up, who I am, to make rules, I get up immediately. I never lose a single moment. Whenever the God within me wants to get up, I jump out of the bed. Whenever he wants to go to bed, I jump into bed. Who I am, master, to create a disturbance. And the master says, you are right. You have found the right Brahma Muhurt. It is said about him that he will eat only, not according to rules, because in a Buddhist monastery you have to follow rules. Everything is fixed. That has a beauty of its own. And to few people that fixed routine suits very well. So don't try to follow Teng. You may not be a Teng. Remember, to few people, almost 50%, a routine helps. Because whenever something becomes a routine, you need not worry about it. It takes of its own care. It is 5 o'clock, you have to get up. You need not decide it every day. Because to decide it every day will create more anxiety thinking. It is 6 o'clock, you have to go to the meditation, so you go. It is 7 o'clock, so you go for the breakfast, you go. And in the breakfast, fixed things are given every day. So you need not think about it, what is going to be given. You need not even desire, because there is no point. The breakfast is fixed. Always it is given the same. And this way the routine follows. By and by it becomes a robot-like thing around you. You are completely free of it. You can do other things. You can meditate. You can become aware. You need not be worried about petty things around you. To 50% people, this suits perfectly. To 50%, this never suits. To fix themselves into a routine becomes a worry and anxiety for them. They are made not that way. One has to feel himself. One has to feel himself how he is made. And never follow anything else. Just first feel yourself, and there are only two possibilities. Either you can live a life of spontaneity, or you can live a life of discipline. Both are good, because the basic thing is to become alert and aware. Thing never followed any rules. Whenever he will feel hungry, he will eat. It may be midnight. Whenever he will not feel hungry, he will not eat. Many days will pass. It was not a fasting, remember, because fasting has to be forced. It was not a fasting. He is not feeling hungry, so it is okay. He will not eat. Many nights he will not sleep if he is not feeling. If he is feeling, for days together he will sleep. That's why the sister said, when you were alive, you took no notice of laws and customs, and even now you are dead, you are making a nuisance of yourself. The sister is also an enlightened woman. Otherwise she would be crying and weeping. She is not crying and weeping. On the contrary, she is giving the right advice to this dying man, a fool who was always a nuisance, and now, even in death, the sister is a totally different type. And this has been my feeling, that a woman are the type who will need an outer discipline. In those 50% people, almost 40% will be women who would need discipline. There are reasons for it. The whole nature has made women to follow a certain law. That's why every 28 days and the period comes. The body follows a routine. If there is something wrong, only then the discipline is broken. Otherwise it is absolutely fixed. A woman's body follows laws. She has to, because she is going to give birth to a child. She is going to become a mother. And a child cannot be left on somebody who moves in an individual way. A woman has a collective unconscious, not individual unconscious. She has to, because a purpose has to be fulfilled through her. The child will come out in 9 months. And if a woman is healthy, everything will be a routine. And if you can make a routine, everything will become healthy. So the sister belongs to the opposite polarity. From the very beginning, you will feel a girl behaves differently than a boy. The girl is more graceful, more rounded, more obedient, not rebellious. A boy, from the very beginning, is a troublemaker, rebellious. If you said, don't do this, then he is bound to do that. A boy is totally different. Even in the womb, a mother can feel whether the child is going to be a boy or a girl, because the boy starts kicking in the womb. You can feel. The girl remains absolutely silent and relaxed. The boy starts kicking. Even in the womb, the male energy is different than female energy. This sister must have been telling him always that you are wrong. But he is true to his self even in his death. He was true to his self when he was alive. He is true to his self when he is dead. He has remained a true, authentic man. True to his own being, not following anything, just following his own life energy, wherever it leads. But the sister is also true to herself. Even when the brother is dead, she is not weeping and crying. The last advice that can be given, she is giving it. And she says, you were a nuisance in your life. You created trouble for others because you never followed any laws and customs. And now, even in your death, you are a nuisance to yourself. She then prodded her brother with her finger, and he fell down with a bang. Then they went off to the crematorium. Both of them know there is no death. It is said when the brother fell down with a bang, the sister went to her monastery. If you take life easily, if you enjoy life easily, if your life by and by becomes a fulfillment, the same will be death. What we are doing, we are not enjoying life, we are only preparing to enjoy. And life is here now, no preparation is needed. And I see people always preparing. They are preparing to live a great life somewhere in the future. They will be afraid of death because in the future death is waiting. And your life is also in the future. You are making a house, purchasing a car and this and that, accumulating things, just getting ready to live. You will never be ready. And by the time you are ready, death will knock at the door. That's the fear, that death may come before I am ready. A man of understanding lives life here and now. Every moment he lives it. Then for him there is no death because there is no future life. He exhausted the moment. He lived it totally. He enjoyed it. He thanked God for it. He is grateful. Where is the fear of death? This moment he is alive. Here, this moment you are alive. Where is the fear of death? Don't try to get ready, just live. And I tell you, everybody as he is ready to live this very moment. Don't miss this moment. And don't ask for long preparations. That way you will be never ready. And the mind gets a habitual form, always of thinking tomorrow, tomorrow. Then it becomes fixed. By the time you have accumulated wealth, the mind will again be telling you tomorrow, tomorrow. Tomorrow is the disease of the mind. A new life comes into existence when you live now. A new life is a now life. Then where is the fear? Who is worried about death? Then you can play a joke in the end. And if you live, you start feeling what life is. It is felt only through living. There is no other way to feel it. It is just like swimming. You swim and you learn. Swimming comes through swimming. Life is felt through living. You postpone, you don't feel life. You feel death all around. Through postponing, you will feel death. Through living you will feel life. If you feel life, it is eternal. It has no death to it. It never dies. It goes on and on and on. And each moment is eternity. Remember it as deeply as possible. Don't postpone. Don't move into the tomorrow. Here now is all that you need. Enjoy it. And the more you enjoy, the more will be given to you. That is what Jesus means when he says, knock and the door shall be opened unto you. Ask and it shall be given. This very moment the door is there. Ask, knock, live, don't postpone. This is the whole message of all those who have become awakened. Today is enough. Tomorrow will take care of itself. And tomorrow never comes. It is always today. And if you know the knack of living here and now, you will be able to live every moment that will come. Even the moment of death you will be able to live. This is what this Tang did. He lived the moment of death. And if you can live the moment of death, how can you die? Then you change your death also into life. Just the opposite is happening to you right now. You are changing your life into death because of postponement. Tomorrow, getting always ready, ready, ready. And when the moment comes, your mind is still getting ready. Drop all postponements. Knock at the moment. And you will be as beautiful as the lilies in the field Jesus talks about. Not even Solomon, at the peak of his glory, was so beautiful. You are beautiful. Why you are wasting yourself? You are divine. Why you are wasting yourself? You are the ultimate. Why you are getting lost into the tomorrows, into the future preparations, into the mind? Why are you wasting your life energy into the desert of time? Be here and now. And this now and here becomes the door. And the door is always waiting for you. Just knock, just for the knocking, it opens. Enough for today.